Hi, it's Tony Nash, and welcome back to Plugged and Unplanned. I'm in the midst of a series with Steve Sammartino, an author, futurist, thinker, and we're right in the thick of a very interesting conversation. If you haven't listened to week one, then go back and listen to week one. Otherwise, let's get stuck into week two. So we're back here again, and I've got Steve Sammartino with me, and it's really exciting what we've covered off. So if you're listening to this all in one go, then you're on a roll. And for those that listened to it the week before, then we're excited to continue this conversation. So we were talking before about the about unlearning and learning, and I know not everyone is a fan of Tony Robbins because
he's a bit rah rah.
He's full on. I mean, yeah. You're full on too.
Am I?
Yeah. But he is full on. But there's some things, and I've listened to a lot of people over the years, and tried to I've tried to embed or integrate things that I felt was right for me in my I never felt my journey that I was indoctrinating myself. Maybe some people thought I was, but to try and find what naturally fitted with me. And I think one of the things we were talking about before when I was mentioning about losing weight. And that you can think about certain things, but it's not until you get into that emotional state, which is what Tony Robbins really talks about. Mm-hmm. Like, so if someone's thinking about changing, and they know they've listened to you, and they were in the crowd in one of your speeches, and they said, I love what you said, but I don't know how. So what you were saying before, it's you start thinking about it, and you start thinking what you might do, which could then crack through. But it really does come around your emotional state, because the frustrating thing about losing weight for me is that you know it all. Like, you know what you're supposed to do, right? You know you should have gone on the run. You know you shouldn't have eaten that, right? And There's just so much internal dialogue going on about you and your journey to lose weight that it gets really, really frustrating. It's actually better not to know anything. Like, to be living...
Well, there's no excuse then, is there?
You're just... You don't know what you don't know, and so therefore you just happily go along living your life. And, I mean, this is really what it is to be an entrepreneur, because what happens is you're out there, or a futurist, you're out there putting your thinking out there to try and work out where we're heading and what's going to come along. And I mean, it's only this week, so it's... what is it? It's December 2017. And in the last... I don't know how many days, 15 days, the price of a Bitcoin has gone from, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 to $23,000. I don't have any Bitcoins.
AUD.
Yeah. $23,000 for Australian dollars. So, I mean, if someone would have predicted that, if you're a great...
It was in my first book.
If futurist.
It was in my first book 4 years ago.
And how many people bought their book? Your book with Bitcoins that you held on to?
Actually, in my book launch, when I did that, I sold a few books on Bitcoin that night because I had a Bitcoin, except it was 0.21 of a Bitcoin at the time. And I sold a few that night, and I've still got those Bitcoins. So that's maybe I can say I've got the world's most expensive book ever sold. Who knows?
0.21,
like 5 grand or something. Yeah, 1/20th. Yeah.
That's nice. You're up there with the Gutenberg Bible.
There you go, right up there. But, it's interesting. The thing that we don't want to do on this is we get taught from a really young age to be afraid of mistakes. And the reason that mistakes in the industrial era were told to avoid them is that they were really expensive then, right? Mistakes were bad. In a digital world, though, mistakes aren't as expensive. And there are ways that we can make cheap mistakes to learn and go on the way. And I really think that idea of doing a lot of experiments that are small and cheap that take you forward are the type of thing that we should be doing with transitioning ourselves. It's like, how can you do like an experiment that will give you a new skill or do something new that helps you transition instead of suffering from that inertia of knowing what you should do? And actually knowing what you should do, like the losing weight, that's really hard. When you know what you should do and you just can't motivate yourself to do it, that's tough, right? That really is tough. But I actually think the thing that most people are afraid of with their careers and where they're going financially and entrepreneurially is that there's some uncertainty with this stuff, and you don't know if it'll work, and there's fear. Mm-hmm. And we get told to be scared, right? Everything, don't do that, don't touch this, Don't make a mistake. You got 7 out of 10. Here's some red pen. We put the red pen in so it looks dangerous, right? Mm. Fire, hot, blood, all of that. But I think that if we can embrace the idea that we've got to just overcome the fear of getting it wrong, and getting it wrong is okay. You know, like the ATAR scores come out this month. And people, you would think that if you don't get into the university course, you're going to go out and eat dog food the rest of your life, the way the society goes on. Like, I'm all for education. I'm an author. I love reading and all of that. But I do think that we have an inordinate focus on success first time, when we know the truth of everything that's been achieved through humanity has been a million mistakes along the way. And we even hear the rhetoric, but people won't embrace it.
Mm.
And I really worry about that.
From my journey as well, because I did do my HSE, and I got 56%, which is not very high. But I
scraped.
I passed. I scraped into uni at Macquarie University. I mastered in Space Invaders and snooker.
Yeah, nice. They're valuable masters. A lot of people don't understand those majors. They're good majors.
Failed in accounting and economics. And so I dropped out and I became the mail boy at the NRMA, you know, like the RACV.
Right,
You know, and I was the guy, you know, in the movies in the 80s where the guy was
moving around. And they'd always be like, hey, you've got to get me a job promote. There was always that like ethic of start in the mail room.
Yeah.
You know what? That ethic, I reckon, got eaten up a little bit in sort of the corporate the last 20 years, but I reckon that ethic is coming back.
Right,
where you can be the equivalent of a mail boy entrepreneur or a mail girl, sorry, male person.
Mm-hmm.
And just say, you know what, I'm going to work it out on my own and work my way up.
Mm.
I actually reckon there's a real shift from formal education to informal education, and I reckon informal rules.
See, the thing was, is after I did that, I then started working, and I got a couple of promotions, and I did do a 6-month computer programming course and got into a programming job, which, as you can imagine, the difference between doing a 3-year degree versus doing a 6-month course, I was a lot less functional than those that had gone through the degree. But once I became a programmer, I thought, well, I'm going to go back to uni and I'm going to get my Bachelor of Business.
Oh, did you? Okay.
And I did. And I went back and I worked out that if I go to the lecturer and find out what he wanted to hear and gave him what he wanted, right, that I would get distinctions.
Yeah.
And yeah,
that's a great hack, and no one talks about it.
Yeah, so all I'm doing is I'm getting distinctions and credits and things, and I'm going, I know more than this. This is not adding any value to me.
Mm.
So for me, going to get a degree was of no value. So I left uni, I sold my car, and I went overseas for 3.5 years traveling around the world. I actually told my family I'm going to travel for 3 years, and my parents actually gave me more money to stay away longer, so because they figured that would save them money, because I was eating them out of house and home. But the thing was, is I say my university degree was traveling around the world.
Yeah.
I met people. I ended up in recruitment in London. I was able to fund my own life, and that was good for me. That worked for me. That was where I was able to, in my mid-20s, find my purpose and my ability, where I could add value. And so it's not necessarily that people don't need to think, well, I've got to go through the system. Some people do. Some people do really well out of it.
Yeah.
And others don't necessarily have to.
I reckon the system suits less people than it does. You know, there's if you average it out, then I reckon there'd be more people the system doesn't suit than does. I really do believe that. And when I had my first startup, my first adult startup, I had a couple, like I had an egg farm when I was a kid, and a t-shirt company as well. But when I had my first .com business, I reckon I learned more in those first 2 years than I learned in 15 years of corporate.
Mm.
And the reason that you learn so much, the same with travel, is the cycles are faster. So what happens when you work for a corporation is that you become in charge of a small part of a big thing. So you don't learn enough about the big thing and the system that works. You only learn about, you know, one cog within that system and how to shine and buff and grease that cog. And it becomes very singular and small. But even if you're starting a very, very small business, because you're touching so many things, production, finance, selling, you know, stock management, warehouse, logistics, you're touching all of these things, you learn a lot more because you go through the cycles, right? And I always say that what we need is more systems thinking. Because if you understand the breadth of a system, you can replug yourself in different areas and find benefits within it. Whereas if you become a cog in a system that someone else owns and controls, as soon as your cog gets replaced, you get replaced, and you don't have the breadth of knowledge to do it. And so I like that idea of systems thinking. And you go on many more cycles the more externalized you are than within a corporate system. And we need to remember too that before the internet, the only way to justify if someone had the skills was formal education, whether it was through a TAFE or a technical course or like the computing course you did. Or that was the way to vet people, right? But now we've got so many other ways to vet people. And the reason that we did arts degrees and commerce degrees and business degrees was the only way to know if the person had some, you know, a bit of mind about them. But we don't need that formal system anymore. In fact, you know, I think there's maybe only a handful, less than 10 jobs you need a formal qualification for. Like 10 jobs, doctor, lawyer, engineer, there's a few of them, right? And we can think of what they are. But most jobs don't require a formal education. So you're going to go out and get a $100,000 loan to get some skills that you could maybe learn for free online. Who knows?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, it is definitely. But one of the, I mean, we talked about, you rattled off some of the things in terms of running your own business. But even more so, it's the team leading. It's the personality.
Yes.
It's all the connections and communications. It's the hiring. It's enrolling people into an idea and having them and having integrity and having and being authentic. And this is why this is where the school system and parents who kind of have worked out, oh, I've got a support system by the government. I'm going to hand over my kids to you guys,
yeah.
And then they're going to come out the end. And on the weekends, I'll throw my two bits in, and,
yeah.
And you know, you've got a great game, good win on the weekend. You guys played, but actually, all these things. Now, I'm curious, and we're not here today to really talk about and sell your book. This is just a conversation,
sure.
That people can listen into, but. Do you cover off any of this in terms of...
You know, this is the number one question I get, and I did 70 speeches around the world last year. The number one question I get, which isn't... Because my talks are always about company strategy and technology and infrastructure and all of those things. They always ask me, what do you teach your kids?
There you go.
There's one little bit in the back of the book, and it's in the last chapter, I think, how to teach your kids and make them future-proof. And I mentioned it before, systems thinking. But I'll give you one example of what I did. I said to my daughter... let's grow some food. And she said, sure, well, let's grow some pizza. And I said, why'd you have to make it so hard, right? She made it hard for me. And I showed her how to grow a pizza from end to end, and we even grew the wheat in our backyard, the entire thing, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Even where the fire comes to bake the dough, we did an entire pizza, 7-month pizza. We were pretty hungry by the time we ate it, right? 7-month pizza. We did the whole thing. I made her plant the seeds, pull out the weeds, water it, pick the tomatoes, cook, do all of the stuff, and we cooked this pizza from end to end. And the reason that I wanted to show her that was to show her how things are pulled together in business, because that's a brilliant business lesson. It took everything through from demand, you know, the consumer, what you want on your pizza, to grow it, to the systems, how long things take. And she came up with some really interesting things that I couldn't have taught her verbally. Like she said, you know, I'm sick of the birds eating our seeds. You know, we need to make a little robot with scarecrow arms so I don't even have to watch it automate that system. So she's thinking about automation systems. She noticed at the end we had excess supply of tomatoes, significant excess supply, right? And then she said to me, we should give our tomatoes to Coles. And I said, give? We're not giving anything to Coles. Sell. And she said, sell? I said, yeah. She said, how much do tomatoes sell for? I said, gee, I don't know, $13 a kilo? She said, let's pull up the grass. You know, it doesn't take kids long to see the entrepreneurial opportunity, but only once you get their hand, and she saw the process. So she was thinking about the systems already. She was thinking about supply chain, too much of this, not enough of that, efficiency of birds stopping eating the seeds, all of that stuff that went into it. You know, so that's the type of thing I try and teach my kids, is how can you show them a system and how the system that they live in works? Because school teaches how to do things, but what we need to do is understand how systems work.
And this is, I mean, I've got a 14-year-old boy and a 12-year-old stepdaughter. And so tech, I mean, it's the babysitter of the 21st century. It's the addiction of the 21st. It keeps the kids up at night. It's around all of us. There's no integrity from the parents to what the, you know, what you tell your children to get off the tech, and then what you do, this is an interesting dilemma for all of us around the world right now, and some of them just let the kids go off and just use that as their as their addiction. I mean, where is the, if we think about the future, if we're future pacing this out and thinking, well, where is this heading? Is there going to be some sort of point of emotional depletion where people go, I'm just going to jack that in and I'm going out into the park? I mean, thankfully, both of our kids are active. They're out there. They're doing other things. But from a accountability point of view in them, in terms of being on or off on, we need to manage that. So yep. Where do you think that's all going?
I think that history is repeating itself somewhat. And I know as a kid, you know, being hooked in front of the TV was one of those addictions, although it's not as pervasive because, you know, the phone can be with you when your kids go to bed and so on. I think it's an indication of how immature the technology is. So technology goes through these maturity cycles. Mm-hmm. And the way that I look at it is the more mature a technology, the more invisible it becomes. And when a technology is immature, we serve it. And then as the technology matures, it starts to serve us. Mm-hmm. So let's think about a fire, right? One of the very first human technologies that we mastered. In the short term, you're collecting the wood for the fire, making the fire, maintaining it, looking at it. To have a flame in order to stay warm or cook things required our attention. And then as that technology became more mature, now it's a button in our kitchen and we are the champions of that technology and it serves us more. Industrial technology, a washing machine and a fridge. You press a button, put the clothes in the washing machine, get on with your life. At the moment, we've got a crying baby in our pocket that needs to be stroked and loved and caressed at every moment. Mm-hmm. And so I think that what we will see is, and we're already hearing it now, people are turning off and saying, I've had enough of this because there's too much interface with what we do. I think the technology will become recessive and enter the walls like electricity has, mm-hmm. and we'll move to an era of ambient computing. And I think we're moving into that right now. If you think about what we're seeing with the voice activation devices like Echo and Google Home and so on, where we speak to the devices and they listen in, privacy aside, that's something else we can talk about. But essentially the technology will be there when we need it, but it will serve us on demand as opposed to us always giving it our full attention and touching it and looking at it. And I think the screen will evaporate and become more recessive as natural language processing gets better. And we really need it. It couldn't come at a time where it is more desired because we're physical beings, mm-hmm. and that emotional human connection that we need. Like, look at us here. We're sitting across from each other and we're having a chat. This is the good part of it. Mm-hmm. It just wouldn't be the same on the phone or as it would be in person. So I'm hopeful that we're going to see a bit of a fork in the technology where it becomes less invasive. And I try and do the same with you. We only let our kids watch TV on the weekends. We don't give them screens in the car. We make them look out the window and look at the world they're living in. You know, that's what we're trying to do.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they have restrictions as well. How old are your kids?
They're 5 and 7. Yeah. Goodness me, I nearly got it wrong.
Yeah, so that, I mean, they're a bit younger, but as they get into their mid-teens and all the other kids are doing it, you're managing.
They get more independent, don't they? It's more complex, sure.
Yeah, and not the insults flying back at you because that's what. But they're becoming their own people, and this is why getting in early. And I think it's really important in terms of all of us trying to explore. And every kid is different. What's going to help them lay that foundation early on, the value system and the belief system and their personal goals to prosper in the years to come. I think that's what everyone really wants to know for their kids. So we haven't really worked it out yet because we're kind of going through.
We don't know.
Because we're going through this transition period of high change around technology and around opportunities and around work, as you said before, and it's an interesting thing.
You know, I can't help but think that we can't know exactly what we'll do, but I reckon there's a pattern that we can see. And if we think through the history of human labour, most labour used to be very physical in nature, and then during the industrial era, it became more intellectual and logic based. Mm-hmm. And I think that the next evolution, although I don't know the exact things we will do, I think that they will be more creative, more human, more emotionally oriented in what we do, because more of that left brain sort of logic will be outsourced to artificial intelligence and the microchip. And I think that the things that we'll be doing are things that we don't have to do, but we want to do.
Mm.
You know, Brian Eno, one of the great artists and musicians, says that art is anything you don't have to do, right? And I think that our commercial society is going to move towards the things that we don't have to do. Like, cooking's a really interesting example, and coffee, right? Because we've had those things automated and manufacturing based for a long time, right? We could get by on all of that, but what do we want to do? We want to cook. We want to see how creative we can become and see how artisanal our food and our coffee can become. And I think there's clues in that as to where our future is going.
Mm.
It's more on that human side, you know, moving up that creative human emotional hierarchy is the type of things that will matter.
Mm.
And so for that purpose, our ability to interact and not just be so ensconced inside the technology, but to be able to come outside of it is going to be really important and a differentiator for kids growing up.
Mm. That's interesting, because I have called this series, and this is the first of hopefully many business people and thought thinkers who I can, you know, sit down and have a conversation with. I basically come in unplanned, but I did, in terms of thinking and reading, you know, the parts of your book. I kind of came up, and I've just got a few notes here.
Yeah, sure.
And I just want to see what you think about.
Curious now to which bits you picked out.
We talked already about a number of things without having me to refer to the few notes that I wrote. But the top seven priorities I wrote down in terms of humanity, or where we're at right now, and I'm thinking in terms of the future as well. So,
yeah, sure.
The first one I wrote down was this: our state of health. So, how healthy we are, and we can go into these in more detail in a bit. The third one I put down: activity, which meant school, work, study, travel, retirement, meditation, sport, using technology. So, what activities are we doing to kind of make up our day and our week and our travel, like our holidays?
Yeah.
Food, so what? How are we nourishing ourselves? What are we putting into our system? Sleep, your mindset, so how are you thinking? What's going on? Your connections, so with children, parents, friends, people, but even connections with causes or with organizations or your sports team, your connections. And then the optional one at the end I threw in, of the seven, was reproduction. So
optional,
because not everyone is part of the. We all have been. We're not here today if we weren't part of that chain. But reproducing is part of the way that our world works. And
yes.
So therefore that was the optional. So health, activity, food, sleep, because that's not a strong one of mine. Mindset.
But you don't get enough, or you.
Don't, yeah, like so, and when I do look. When I do get a good serving of it,
yeah.
and I've given myself permission not to work back late and not to keep watch TV I'm all the better for it, and I'm of more value to people.
Yeah.
So all of these kind of interconnected in their own areas: your health, your activity, food, sleep, mindset, connections, all those things that kind of make up your life. So and I was thinking about. My kids on technology and myself on technology and where things are heading and in relation to that. And it's really like it's kind of like, for me, it's a reclaiming of yourself. It's a reclaiming of how we were, of being kind of maybe just being on holidays all the time, or feeling like you're living in a world of abundance where for those that have it, have enough money to take care of themselves, whether they work or don't work because of their investments. So you feel like you're empowered. You feel like you're, which comes right back to the beginning in terms of what we're talking about. How do you set your own destiny? How do you, if we're all kind of now, there's no such thing as a job anymore.
Mm.
You do stuff, and you might do it for this person or that person, or you might do it for one organization for an extended period of time. And so it kind of all fits into this whole thing about you actually need to stake a claim for yourself. You got to change everything. So it's not that you're selfish, but you just kind of, it brings it back to this world we live in, where all of the messaging, all of the images about how you should look how, you know, what car you should drive, and your state, all the status stuff, and go, hold on a second, now, hold on. I just want to
I just want to dump all of that, and I just want to leave.
I mean, I believe deep down in my heart, and I know that what we see on Instagram might, you know, say the opposite, but I do believe that this idea of, you know, the status anxiety of consumption and this consumption cycle, I really do feel like we're going to come out of that. And, you know, the move towards the experience economy, I think, is the start of that, us understanding what is more valuable as a human. Mm. And even the idea that you have a personal brand and in what you do rather than what you own is an important move away from that, just buying stuff and getting in this consumer train. And also, you know, once we become workers who are a little bit more independent or freelance and we come in and out of different sources of revenue, I think that that'll change that perspective. But, you know, the one thing that is true is that we kind of have to invest in ourselves for a little bit. I feel like when I grew up and when I went to school, there was this air that you've got to invest in this stuff so you can serve someone else and serve a corporation or serve a government, or you're subservient. And I feel like we're having this existential kind of revolution where we're saying, actually, I want to serve me and I want to learn new things and I'm going to go online and learn this and I want to get healthy for me because I want to live a long, healthy life and be able to hang out with my kids as they get older and have my grandparents. So I think that there's these enduring riches that are non-financial that we're starting to realize, you know, mental health, physical health, and they're real things. You know, for such a long time, mental health was seen as this flunky side thing. Oh, you know, Steve's got mental health issues, Tony's got, you know, mental health issues. Like it wasn't real, you know? And so I think we're starting to respect the breadth of humanity now a little bit more. And there's a way to go, but these priorities that you've mentioned there, I actually reckon they're the clues of what we'll do, in because we're gonna outsource the stuff, the making the things and the food and the housing to digital fabrication technologies. And so what we're gonna focus on is how humans can improve our life, improve our communications, improve our health, and enjoy the things that we do, and just become a little bit more fluid. Mm. This idea of working, earning, consuming, and following a system that is, you know, 9 to 5 and a linear career, and it goes to 65 and then you retire and you sit in a chair and maybe if you're lucky enough you get to see beach sunsets. I feel like that is too linear and we're moving away from this linear process. I actually kind of think that's exciting, and the nerve-wracking thing is we don't know what this stuff looks like yet, how we're going to mash all this up, but that's actually the entrepreneurial opportunity, is to people to put their hand up and go, actually, I want to help people create their health a bit better. I actually want to help people be more fluid in their living arrangements and where they go. You know, even the idea of different types of housing, you know, the idea that you might have shared housing in the city, but then that gives you access to a beach house that you wouldn't have otherwise had if you were stuck in a mortgage. Mm. You know, the American, the Australian dream, that might shift and change.
Yeah. So that's a good point for us to pause this week's episode.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.